Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We are live from St. Paul, where the Republican National Convention was gaveled to order today, thanks to Mother Nature and Hurricane Gustav. President Bush is a no-show, but you might say he is here in spirit. In national polls, his reputation may be rock bottom. The McCain campaign may not be entirely unhappy. He's off tracking the storm. But on this convention floor, plenty of Republicans will tell you George Bush's legacy is solid. Here's Dottie Egger, a 72-year-old delegate from the Rio Grande Valley in Texas.
As history goes down the road, he will be listed as one of the great presidents. I know a lot of people would argue with that, but I really and truly think that he will be listed as one of the great presidents.
And from Kannapolis, North Carolina, 18-year-old delegate Nelia Hamby.
I think overall we could all agree when he went to do something, he tried to achieve it no matter what it was. Whether you liked it or you didn't like it, he still went out to achieve what he tried.
Okay, this hour on Point, the Bush legacy and the campaign of John McCain. You can join the conversation, how will you remember George W. Bush? And if you plan to vote for John McCain, is it because you want more of the same or something different? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We are planning to catch up with Hurricane Gustav in a moment and with the latest news on Sarah Palin. First, let me introduce my guests tonight. With me here at our broadcast booth in the XL Center in St. Paul is Byron York, White House correspondent for the National Review and a commentator for Fox News. Byron, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Also with us here in St. Paul is Juliet Alprin, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Juliet, so happy to sit down with you here.
Nice to see you.
And with us from Washington, we're joined by Michael Gerson, former speechwriter and policy advisor to President George W. Bush, now a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and a columnist for The Washington Post. Michael Gerson, welcome.
Great to be with you.
Great to have you from Washington. We've got a line out to New Orleans and hope to hear there from there in a moment on Hurricane Gustav, but there has been a lot of talk and headlines today from Sarah Palin and her family. With us to talk about that, Michael Carey, columnist for the Anchorage Daily News, just in from Alaska. Michael Carey, sitting down here fresh off the plane, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
All right, you've seen the headlines just like us. Sarah and Todd Palin's eldest daughter, Bristol, it turns out, is 5 months pregnant. The world learns this today. The family says that they and John McCain have known it for a while. What do we know here? Is this news in Alaska?
Well, yes. I got up this morning and wrote a column and sent it to my newspaper, and I knew nothing about this. And I got over here to the center and walked into the office, and somebody said, "Did you see this?" and told me to look at the television screen.
And there it is,
yes.
just as big and clear as can be. The McCain campaign says they knew all about it, that they knew before they announced that she was going to be his vice presidential pick. The family says, you know, this she's going to have to grow up fast here, and she has our unconditional love. How do you think this will be received in Alaska? What are you hearing there at home, Michael?
There a couple. I actually have heard very little from home because I've been so busy here, but I think it'll... Well, the Alaska delegates Republican delegates were interviewed, and they all said the same thing, which was people have big families. Families are loving and forgiving. We wish the family well in the future. But I think of it, the political part to me is that Sarah Palin's achieved many things as governor, but her personal life has at times continued to intrude on her political life. This is at least the third time I can think of.
Now, let's
so it
just,
does make you wonder.
Let's just get it all out there.
And we have to figure out if we're talking about the real pregnancy or the fake pregnancy to get to the soap opera.
Right. Now, the fake pregnancy part of this gossip and rumor that has now become part of the reason the family is being so upfront. Not to mention the fact that Bristol will soon be showing at 5 months.
Well, the fake pregnancy is that there was a rumor that Sarah Palin's daughter had a baby some months ago, the baby that Sarah Palin had, and that Sarah Palin faked the pregnancy so as not to embarrass her daughter or embarrass herself.
This is the Down syndrome baby that, in fact, she had in April, but the rumor was it was her daughter's
right,
baby.
And responsible reporters and editors, including those at the Daily News, looked at this and could find no basis for it except that people who didn't like Sarah Palin believed it.
And so now Sarah Palin, who's been brought in part to fire up the religious right, who stands opposed to sex education and is pro-abstinence and I think is against birth control outside marriage, has a pregnant daughter, but so far we're hearing a lot of support around the Republican convention for her. Moments ago, we caught up with Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas. He has strong pro-life positions. We asked him, the senator, what he thinks about the news of Sarah Palin's 17-year-old daughter's pregnancy.
You know, I think it's an instructive moment. These things happen in life, and instead of the child being aborted, they're going to have the child. They're going to make a family out of it. They're going to be loving and receiving, and I think that's the right thing to do. I think it's also kind of the right lesson to talk about. And it's uncomfortable, and it doesn't come at a good time. But these things generally don't for people's average lives. So, you know, I think it's taking a bad situation and handling it right and the best you can.
Michael Carey is with us from the Anchorage Daily News. From what you know of Sarah Palin, does it sound credible to you that she was full and forthright with John McCain about this, in spite of the fact that it was not public knowledge?
I don't know what to think about that. This has raised questions about the whole buzzword vetting process, and I'm sure there are going to be a lot more. I have no idea what their conversations were like. I just gather, like most of the rest of us here, they were brief.
Brief, and now the news.
Mr. Schmidt of the campaign said that,
in fact, strategist.
I was right there. There was an impromptu press conference in which he said John McCain had talked to her, but beyond that, it was a family matter, and that was all he would say.
It was a family matter. Barack Obama on the campaign trail today said the same thing in Monroe, Michigan. He was asked about Sarah Palin's pregnant daughter. Barack Obama reminded reporters that his own mother was 18 years old when she had him, and he also told reporters that he firmly opposes dragging relatives, family, into the political spotlight.
People's families are off limits, and people's children are especially off limits. This shouldn't be part of our politics. It has no relevance to Governor Palin's performance as a governor or her potential performance as a vice president.
There you go, Barack Obama today. Michael Carey. More that we're going to learn in a sort of a fast and furious way about Sarah Palin, or do you feel that it's fairly transparent at this point?
Well, I'm sure we're going to learn a lot more about her. I think that one thing I could add to the perspective of Alaskans is how amazing it is that, I know the governor, I've interviewed her on television, I've moderated debates with her on the radio as well, but it's sort of like somebody you know from down the road turns out to be running for vice president, and then on top of it, her pictures on Newsweek today, I'm sure Alaskans just look at this and are kind of dumbfounded. And now her daughter's going to wind up, as a student at West High School in Anchorage, is going to wind up on the front page of all these papers, too, in the context of this other rumor story. And now it turns out to be real. I mean, the whole thing, there's a fantastic quality to the whole thing.
It's a long way from Wasilla. Michael Carey with the Anchorage Daily News. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, sir.
And let's check in very quickly, if I may, on the picture in New Orleans. Hurricane Gustav is sort of wagging the dog up here in St. Paul this week. Whole program shifted around to accommodate the hurricane. We're joined right now by Times-Picayune environmental reporter Mark Schlefstein. He's been following Gustav's progress. He joins us from New Orleans. Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
No problem, Tom.
So Hurricane Gustav, now Category 1, we're told, and has gone glancingly more off toward west of New Orleans. Is this still devastating? Is this just a big storm? How do you describe it at this point?
Well, so far in the New Orleans area, it's not devastating, and we're still trying to figure out exactly what's happened to the west of us in the coastal communities of Houma and Morgan City, some of those other areas. It's really unclear yet exactly how difficult the situation is down there. Meanwhile, this afternoon we've got some additional storm surge flooding that may be occurring, and in the New Orleans area that was certainly unexpected. It's water that comes at the end of a hurricane moving by when the last winds curving around the storm start coming back up from the northwest, and that's kind of some people by surprise.
Is New Orleans seriously flooded? Is there remaining a fear that it will be? Do you expect to have any displaced people?
No, none of the above. This is so far a minor event in terms of the flooding here. There was some real concern in the middle of the day when storm surge actually raised the level in the industrial canal in the middle of the city, which was the place where a wall failed on its east side and flooded what's called the lower Ninth Ward. Today what happened was that winds came and blew storm surge over the top of levees on the other side of that canal towards the downtown area. But the flooding was not really a life-threatening sort of a situation.
Sounds like the great Gustav may be receding, both from the Gulf Coast, maybe, and maybe soon from the news, maybe soon from the program at the Republican National Convention in St. Paul as well. Mark Schlifstein with Times-Picayune in New Orleans, thanks very much for being with us.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Juliet Alperin with us here at the XL Center in St. Paul. Maybe all that storm stuff is going to recede here, but what a wild beginning of a convention this has been. Just thrown topsy-turvy by the storm and the Republican strong reaction to it.
Absolutely. You really get a sense that John McCain and his advisors wanted to be so careful in terms of not repeating the mistakes of President Bush, like we saw in Hurricane Katrina, that they really took every effort they could to downplay what was happening here that's of a political nature in order to focus on what's happening in the Gulf. And, you know, you could argue that it served them quite well.
Hyper-vigilant, and maybe now back to political business. Juliet Alperin, Byron York with us here in St. Paul, and Michael Gerson in Washington. Please stand by. We are live from St. Paul and the Republican National Convention. We're looking tonight at the legacy of President George W. Bush and how it stands over with, alongside, the presidential campaign of John McCain. You can join us. How will you remember George W. Bush? What does he mean for John McCain? 1-800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Republican National Convention, where Hurricane Gustav has taken center stage today. But convention business goes on. We are looking tonight at the legacy of President George W. Bush and how it stands over alongside the presidential campaign of the GOP's John McCain. I'm joined by Juliet Alperin. She's national political correspondent for The Washington Post. By Byron York, also with us here in St. Paul, White House correspondent for The National Review, commentator for Fox News, and from Washington, D.C., patiently standing by Michael Gerson, former speechwriter and policy advisor to President George W. Bush, now columnist for The Washington Post. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Does a vote for John McCain mean a vote for more of the same or something new? Is it a loss for McCain that Bush and Cheney are not speaking tonight? Is it a gain? Is it a wash? What is the legacy of George W. Bush? Can McCain escape it? Should he try or not? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. On September 2nd, 2004, George W. Bush accepted his party's nomination to run for a second term as president.
I'm running for president with a clear and positive plan to build a safer world and a more hopeful America. I'm running with a compassionate conservative philosophy that government should help people improve their lives, not try to run their lives.
George Bush, 4 years ago. This week, John McCain will formally accept the nomination to run for the GOP. Juliet Alperin, we are hearing all kinds of things. I mean, it's convention time here, so people want to be enthusiastic about everything Republican. But even here, you hear some, you know, a little head-holding about how low the president's poll numbers have gone, about how the economy looks, about how he has struggled with the war, and more. What do you know about how the McCain camp looks at George W. Bush? Are they really unhappy that he's not here tonight as planned?
I don't think they're unhappy at all. I think they feel like this has been an opportunity to get around all those stories that inevitably would have been written about comparing the two of them, many that were put on hold because of Hurricane Gustav, and also just because they didn't feel like average Americans sitting at home watching their television are particularly eager to see President Bush making the case for John McCain. I think they feel like he can make that campaign and that message on his own.
Byron York, how do you see this campaign against the Bush presidency? The Democrats last week saying this is, you know, John McSame, that a vote for John McCain is four more years of the same. How much of the W legacy does John McCain have necessarily in his backpack? How much has he taken on to please the Republican base? How do you see the dance between these two men and what they're standing for now?
Well, here at the convention, I think you need to look at Bush's legacy in two ways. There's Bush's legacy out in the country, where he's at 30% or maybe a little less, and there's Bush's legacy inside the convention, which is filled with delegates from all over the country, local officials, and they really like him. I mean, with all the reservations about him, if Bush had appeared tonight, I think he would have been very, very well received, because he still is reasonably popular with delegates here. Now, as far as McCain's independence, I do think when you look at the choice of Sarah Palin, that is one example of McCain declaring independence, because a lot of Republicans felt that McCain had made a lot of progress with the "he's not ready" attack against Barack Obama. They've
right.
really
not
been
ready.
Gaining on that. Mm-hmm. And the choice of Palin diminishes that a great deal. But what it did was it got McCain back to this, "I'm a reformer, I'm going to bring something new, I'm not your standard Republican." And so I think that just the events of the last three or four days show that he has, that he sees it's important to declare his independence on that score.
Michael Gerson, you know George W. Bush pretty well. You put words in his mouth mm-hmm. as a speechwriter. How do you see the Sarah Palin choice? Is this John McCain asserting, demonstrating his maverick streak, his independence, or is this John McCain courting the Christian right that George W. Bush so deliberately brought fully into political play to considerable success?
Well, I think it's a pretty remarkable twofer. I mean, I've never seen conservatives as excited about John McCain as I've seen since the choice of Sarah Palin. She represents the kind of choice that they wanted. At the same time, she made a reputation by taking on a corrupt Republican establishment in Alaska. And that, you know, that fits perfectly and seamlessly with McCain's self-conception and the way he wants his campaign to appear, which is a reform Republican. Because the challenge he faces is not just an unpopular incumbent, but also the perception that the Republican Congress did not do a good job, and also that there were a series of ethics scandals over the last couple of years in the Republican fold that McCain needs to, you know, come out and say, "I'm different than this."
George W. Bush has his supporters here out in the world. At this point, he's you know, widely called one of the worst presidents in history. It is easy to find that. You know, Google George Bush, and up it comes. I want to ask each of you how you really imagine John McCain's policy playing out as compared to George W. Bush policy. He's had tough fights with George W. Bush, famously in South Carolina in the year 2000 over the presidency. But there's also the famous hug. And here's some tape from 2005, June 19. He was talking with Tim Russert on Meet the Press about his disagreements with President Bush. McCain minimized the differences, saying that on big issues, the war on terror, the war in Iraq, national security, fiscal discipline, he and George W. Bush were on the same page. Let's listen.
The fact is that I have agreed with President Bush far more than I have disagreed. And on the transcendent issues, the most important issues of our day, I have been totally in agreement and support of President Bush. So have we had some disagreements on some issues, to both particularly domestic issues? Yes. But I will argue my conservative record of voting and with anyone's, and I will also submit that my support for President Bush has been active and very impassioned on issues that are important to the American people.
John McCain, June 19, 2005. Now, that's 3 years back. Byron York, when you look at these two, agree or disagree with John McCain himself? He says, "I have agreed with President Bush far more than I've disagreed, and on the transcendent issues, the most important issues, I've been totally in agreement."
Well, McCain always calls the war on terror the transcendent issue of our time. And on that, they are more in agreement than in disagreement, although we should say that McCain has been a big critic of the conduct of the war, certainly up to the beginning of the surge when Bush finally agreed to the surge in December 2006. Now, on another issue, though, if you talk to the conservative base, You go around anywhere from Iowa to South Carolina, points west. The thing that they didn't like about Bush the most is federal spending. And that is the area in which McCain, since the very beginning of his campaign, when nobody thought he had a chance, has been talking about cutting back on federal spending and making oblique and indirect criticisms of Bush every time he appeared. And I think that's where the base hopes that if he's elected, he would be very different from Bush.
Juliet, how about it? The Democrats say McSame. Is that fair? You look at the Bush legacy, you look at the McCain plans, and I guess the platform, which has been formally gaveled through here today, McSame?
There are some differences. Probably one of the biggest differences would be on the question of climate change, and you actually even saw that a bit in the platform. There was not a mention of global warming or climate change in the platform in 2004, mm-hmm. and at McCain's request, they put in language this time which said that humans were contributing to. They initially said global warming, and they changed the language to be climate change. But again, this is basically the same. And so in that case, he really did mention that that is a big break. I would say, though, on many of the large issues that are going to affect the economy, things like tax cuts, not only is McCain backing what Bush has done, but he's calling for much greater tax cuts, which in many ways could have as great an influence on the economy and on the deficit as things like trimming some earmarks, which is something that McCain has railed against.
Michael Gerson, in Washington, it's not easy to sum up such big things, but you're a speechwriter. Maybe you can do it. How do you sum up George W. Bush's legacy as we look forward to the end of his term? It is not far away now. You know, it'll be January.
No, it isn't.
He'll be out.
The end of his term is not far away, and it's probably a couple of decades early to determine his legacy, given past presidents. I mean, Harry Truman left office with an unpopular war, with accusations that he had caused the Cold War, and that opinion reversed, basically because he was right about the big thing, which was the conduct of the Cold War against the Soviet Union. The question will be, is President Bush right about the war on terror or the threat of weapons of mass destruction and other issues that he raised? We don't know that. It'll take a long time. I do think, though, of all the Republican primary candidates, John McCain is the least likely candidate to be the Bush third term. When I was at the White House, he was often a pain in the neck or maybe some other part of the anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to environment, when it came to campaign finance, when it came to, tough criticisms of Rumsfeld, the conduct of the war, I mean, torture. These were issues where he put a lot of distance between himself and the president. Some of those things I strongly agree with him on. Some others, have some concerns. But I don't think he's credible just as a mirror image of George W. Bush, given their history of rivalry and their significant disagreements.
Let's go to our listeners on the Bush legacy and the McCain candidacy. From Oxnard, California, Joanne is on the line. Hi, Joanne. You're on the air to St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to comment on my thoughts of the Bush legacy. It seems to me that George Bush, his administration, and his apologists have been disastrous for every single area that they have touched, from the Constitution, basic human rights, basic civil rights, just fairness. The economy, I could go on and on. And I think his legacy is going to be as the Nero who fiddled as the earth burned.
And McCain, John McCain, would you expect something different, Joanne, or McSame?
Slightly different. He is a little more attentive to the impending global warming problems that we're going to have to face, although some of the other areas I think he would just follow George Bush. He's one of the apologists.
Joanne, thanks for calling. Juliet, clearly, whether it's McCain or Obama on Inauguration Day in January, there is a really daunting list of challenges here. No small number of them have to be attributed to a president who's been in office for 8 years. In some ways, whether it's McCain or Obama, they're going to be left with the legacy in their lap for better and a lot for worse.
Absolutely. I mean, they are inheriting so many things, whether it's the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, whether it's the issue of global warming or, the deficit that we're struggling with. There's just no question that that they are going to be faced with this legacy. And I think one of the reasons why President Bush's allies, even if they're not crazy about McCain, want him elected is because they think he will do the best job in executing and continuing and redeeming the legacy that Bush has been establishing over the last 8 years.
As opposed to turning the wheel away from so much of that. Let's get a call from Nina, Wisconsin. Bob, you're on the air to St. Paul.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear, Bob. What do you see?
Okay. Sure. Great. I just I wanted to comment. You had asked earlier about Sarah Palin and why she was chosen. And I think one reason is it seems like this might be a play for the blue-collar vote. I mean, she seems to be really the only candidate on either ticket who could really claim, you know, sort of a blue-collar roots or blue-collar mentality down to, you know, her five kids with sort of funny names and a husband with a goatee and now even a, you know, even a, an unwed pregnant daughter. And I say that half in jest, but I mean, I think that's something that a lot of blue-collar folks could identify with her.
Do you think it'll work for John McCain? Do you think it'll work for the whole ticket at the polls? And do you see her bringing something different than a George W. Bush-era tone to the White House, Bob?
I do. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm certainly not a McCain fan, but I think this, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the blue-collar vote and who's going to get the blue-collar vote. I mean, we all know how much money McCain has. We know, we know Obama is a multimillionaire. We know Joe Biden is, you know, if not a multimillionaire, certainly looks the part. And, you know, Sarah Palin kind of brings that, I think, sort of a blue-collar feel or, you know, authenticity maybe to that ticket.
Yep. Bob in Neenah, Wisconsin, thanks very much for your call. Byron York, how about it? John McCain wants to be loved and voted for by the Republican base. At the same time, he has to have some of those independents and maybe a blue-collar swath that the Democrats would like to have as well. Do you think Sarah Palin helps on that front?
Well, a couple of responses. One, Joe Biden does look the part, but I believe he's perennially the poorest member of the Senate. I believe there was a time when he actually had a negative net worth.
Yes. I mean, he claims it. He claims it back to Scranton and back to working-class roots.
Right.
He looks kind of patrician senator, but he takes the train home and, net worth zero or below sometimes.
He looks very, very polished, and he's certainly a member in good standing of the Senate club. As far as the blue-collar votes, I mean, that was clearly the big battleground between McCain and Obama, especially in Pennsylvania and in Ohio, and to some degree in West Virginia, where she, you know, Hillary Clinton just ran away with it. Whether it's some of those people, I think when the caller talked about blue-collar, he may be talking about some of these voters who never warmed to Obama in the Democratic primaries, and is there a possibility that when you have a one-on-one race with McCain, whether they can some of them can be peeled off for the Republican ticket? I think Sarah Palin gives you maybe a little opportunity for that, and I also think that there could be, she could bring a sort of Western appeal. I mean, because she's really quite Western in this whole contrast between
Northwest,
the Northeast.
Nevertheless.
Yeah, but you
West
know, in,
as well, yep.
in states like Colorado, Nevada, I'm not sure, but I think that there could be some appeal there.
Her husband's
as well.
A snowmobiling champ, for heaven's sake.
Snow machining.
Snow machining,
call it in
excuse
Alaska.
Me.
Yes.
The Iron Dog. Let's get a call from Tony in Tampa, Florida. Tony, you're on the air.
Hi, Don. How are you?
Well, what do you know, Tony?
Well, you know, I've been listening, and you know, I think that image counts for a lot, but I'm hoping that the American people have come to a point where they don't buy as much into image as they do into philosophy and as far as credentials. I look at the Bush presidency, and I think that, generally speaking, Bush has been a president in denial. And it sounds like America is a nation in denial if they think that the day will come when we will look at this in a totally different way. As for McCain, I think McCain is certainly a better choice. Frankly, 8 years ago to this moment, I don't understand why he wasn't chosen over Bush at that time. This is a second chance at it. Well, another chance anyway. But I think that the Bush legacy is such that overall, America hopefully will see that this kind of philosophy, these kinds of policies simply don't work. And unless McCain presents himself as drastically different from George Bush, I don't think he's going to fly. I also think that in regards to his choice as vice president, some of the things that are now being revealed about her are certainly not a terrible thing. I like the fact that it's pointed out that this should not be have anything to do with anyone's political campaign. But I think that it kind of is, it runs counter to the general vision and picture that the Christian right likes to present and support.
Tony in Tampa, let us pick it up when we come back from a short break here. Thanks very much for your call. Byron York, Michael Gerson, Juliet Alperin, please stand by. We're live from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Republican National Convention, looking at George Bush's legacy and the McCain campaign. Listeners, you can join us, 800-423-8255. Live from St. Paul, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from St. Paul, Minnesota. Behind me, the sound of 10,000 protesters who descended on St. Paul today. Most marched peacefully, but there were a few clashes with police. Five arrested for setting a dumpster on fire, pushing it into a police car. Here's a group of police warning a group of protesters, anti-war protesters, by and large, not to come any closer to the site of the convention. We're talking tonight about the legacy of George W. Bush, war, among other elements, and looking at John McCain's campaign alongside that. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Is McCain battling the Bush legacy right now, rushing to the storm front? Gustav, is he battling with great job Brownie and that Katrina legacy of George W. Bush? On taxes, on war, on the economy, do you see a difference between Bush and McCain? Is it possible that George W. will one day be seen as a Harry Truman, as a underestimated president? Can McCain escape Bush? Should he? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK, joined by Juliet Alperin, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, by Byron York, White House correspondent for The National Review and commentator for Fox News, and by Michael Gerson, former speechwriter for George W. Bush, now columnist at The Washington Post. Not much of a program here tonight. It was supposed to be George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, but the First Lady came. She spoke earlier tonight, focusing all of her remarks on Hurricane Gustav and its effects.
Our shared American ideals will always transcend political parties and partisanship. We hope that the people on the Gulf Coast know that the American people are here to do what we can to assist them.
Laura Bush before the Republicans tonight. John McCain, in the tape we played earlier, may have wrapped himself all around the president in 2005. On Fox News yesterday, he also talked about ways that he and President Bush differ. He talked about climate change, the economy, and in this exchange with Fox interviewer Chris Wallace about what constitutes torture.
I obviously don't want to torture any prisoners. There's a long list of areas that we were in disagreement on. But I also
You're not
think,
suggesting he did want to torture prisoners.
Well, waterboarding to me is torture. Okay? And waterboarding was advocated by the administration and, according to published report, was used.
An elbow there from the McCain campaign, from John McCain to the Bush administration. Let's take a call from Portland, Maine and Dallas. Hi, Dallas. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. I think that John McCain is certainly a more viable candidate than President Bush. President Bush is not a statesman or a public servant, and John McCain is, and could be President of the United States. But my support is with Obama because I think Barack Obama is an excellent leader, a born leader, and I think he will and should win the presidency. But I don't think the Democrats should compare McCain to Bush as their main fighting point against him. I think that Obama's values, Obama's virtues are what should run the Democratic campaign, not a lazy comparison of McCain to Bush.
But if you saw the Democratic convention last week, you know there was a lot of McSame, a lot of say no to four more years, say no to a third term of George W. Bush. This was one of the major themes of the Obama-Biden ticket last week.
Yeah, I heard that, and I didn't like hearing it. Because four more years of Bush are only going to happen if the American people let a kind of atrocity into our nation again. And, I mean, I do think that's the American people's responsibility to get rid of a president like Bush and to stop a war like the Iraq War. And I think the four more years of Bush comments on the part of the Democrats go to that last caller's point about image. You know, they feel that they have to maintain a certain image to pitch themselves to the American people. And I wish they wouldn't dumb themselves down like that. I wish they would stand behind Barack Obama, who is an amazing candidate. He's a leader. He's inspiring. He's the real deal. He brings critical thought back to this whole ridiculous charade.
Dallas, thanks very much for your call from Portland. Michael Gerson, what about it? Dallas says, when you look at the Bush record, it's the responsibility of the American people to get a different party into office. How do you look at that? I mean, you were part of it for a time.
No, I was.
When you look at the economy, when you look at the trouble we've had with the war, when you look at the deficits, is there an accountability moment here that the citizenry needs to act on? Does it necessarily mean Obama?
Well, it's not my job anymore to defend the administration.
I ask in full knowledge.
Right, yeah. But I would say that Bush is going to have a case to make when he leaves office in a less partisan and bitter time on his legacy. I mean, he had the most important education reform since LBJ. He has an AIDS program that's going to have 2 million people on AIDS drugs. Medicare reform that has, 10 million people getting their prescription drugs for free, improvements in Iraq that are significant, war on terror where there haven't been more attacks since 9/11. Those are not small things, but this isn't the time, honestly, for the president necessarily to be making that case, because John McCain does, in this convention speech coming up, I think, have to make clear this is a year where, Barack Obama being a typical Democrat, which he sounded like in his speech, may be enough to win. John McCain sounding like a typical Republican will assure that he loses, given the kind of swift current that he's swimming against. He's going to have to sound on things like gas prices and mortgage crisis and the environment. He's going to have to sound to people like, I've never heard that from a Republican before. That's a real challenge going into this, into Thursday night in the speech. But, I think he has... the ideological tools in his background and the disagreements with the president to be able to make that argument.
Juliet, what do you think? Will John McCain make that distance between himself and the president in a manner that keeps him, sort of cool with the Republican base and the people at this convention, and at the same time be able to signal real distance and difference to the broader electorate?
Absolutely. I think he will be more focused on the broader electorate, in part because by picking Sarah Palin, he really has satisfied conservatives in a way that he hadn't coming into this convention. And really, when you hear time and time again when they talk about country first, they're really trying to define McCain not as a Republican, not as a Democrat, but as a public servant. And that's the argument that he's going to be making to the electorate when he speaks on Thursday night.
What about the dissatisfaction within the Republican Party about George Bush? It's not hard to scratch and find it here. You can read the Politico's talking with John Huntsman, governor of Utah.
Yeah.
Dates back to the Reagan years.
Yeah.
Very unhappy with George Bush and very upfront about it. Michael Gerson says progress on education, but here's Huntsman calling No Child Left Behind. This is Republican governor back to Reagan, an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah.
George Bush on the environment. He says, it's just too slow to recognize the threat on the environmental front and really falling short. This is not unusual to find Republicans who have that kind of laundry list of criticism of Bush.
Absolutely. But John McCain already has those people on his side. So I think he's less worried about them. Those are the kind of people who are surprised that they actually have someone who they can identify with and who they really appreciate. And so I think basically he's been working on shoring up his base with those who are really loyal to Bush. But more importantly, he really has to speak to the majority of Americans right now who aren't happy with the president, and many of whom are independents, or some of them are going to be Democrats.
Byron,
let me add one point there, that No Child Left Behind has never been popular with Republican governors and state officials, basically because they don't like to have to meet firm standards in helping minority children. That is the real debate that's going on education. Do you have standards you have to meet or not?
Well, of course, many have taken the side of those standards. Many have said it's because there aren't the resources put there to do it, but I take your point. It does put them on the hook for those numbers.
Right. I think that's been a traditional critique from day one of No Child Left Behind. I think that the president's unpopularity has allowed a lot of conservatives and libertarians in the Republican Party to pile on about a lot of things that I think are not very popular with the American people. People like, I think, schools with standards.
Byron York, do you think the Republican Party wants to make a turn away from the Bush years, away from Bush policy? And if so, on what front?
Well, I was kind of raising my hand to get into this conversation because the issue for McCain is not the people who don't like the Republicans who don't like Bush. It's that section of the Republican Party that hates McCain.
Right.
I mean, look, go back to the primaries. He had to win over some people, and he had to just defeat others. I mean, you know, remember the eve of the Florida primary when Mitt Romney still had sort of a chance. All of the really big names in conservative talk radio were pushing very hard against McCain.
Absolutely.
And they had a lot of listeners who agreed with them.
But that's
about
the reason
McCain.
For my question. So, does the GOP want a third term? Would they prefer? Is McCain in office going to be a problem? They'd rather
yes,
have a
McCain in office will always be a problem for the Republican base because he'll always do something to irritate them and alienate them. But I think Juliet's right. He has never been more popular with the Republican base than he has been at this moment. That may not be saying a lot, but I think the choice of Palin has been a big thing for him. But the issue for McCain is to get the people who are still happy with Bush because they're the ones who really couldn't stand him at many times in the past.
Let's go to McEwen in Indian Shores, Florida. McEwen, you're on the air.
Hi. The only thing I can talk about what the Republican base should be looking at is why in God's name are they talking about family values? Here is John McCain, who has anything you read about him, including his own writings, he has slept with every woman he can get hold of. He has divorced his gorgeous young wife because she was 4 inches shorter and walked on crutches.
You're talking decades ago now when he came home from his years as a POW.
Correct.
I mean, is there no statute of limitations?
I don't think so. Family values, as all those people talk about in the Republican Party, is you do stay married to one woman, and instead he is the ultimate trophy husband with a gorgeous lady.
Well, McEwen, if I may, let us pick it up this way. Byron York, if there were a McCain administration, would you expect family values to be as much in the rhetoric, as much in the talk out of the White House as it has been under George W. Bush?
I think if you go back to the Saddleback Summit, which seems like a long time ago,
it was just a couple of weeks ago
at Rick Warren's church in California, McCain was asked what his greatest moral failure was. He knew the question ahead of time. He and Obama both knew that question ahead of time. And he said,
he knew more ahead of time. He had listened in the car on the way over, right? There was supposed to be the cone of silence, wasn't there.
No. Rick Warren told them the questions, the first two questions ahead of time.
Oh, okay, the first two. Okay,
He said, I'm going to ask you what your greatest moral failure is.
Yep.
So McCain knew
he
this.
He was ready.
And he said, point blank, the failure of my first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I
with
talked
no
to his,
embellishment.
To his spin people afterwards, and I said, you know, look, he's talking about adultery. That doesn't sit well with evangelicals or a lot of conservatives. And they said, but he just can't be more honest about it. So whether that lasts or not, I don't know. As far as family values and his administration is concerned, I think clearly he said again at the Saddleback Summit, as far as abortion is concerned, I'm, strongly pro-life, and it's going to be a pro-life administration.
And Michael Gerson.
Let me add here that there seems to be an assumption by some of the callers that evangelicals would be upset about moral failures in someone's family. And that really probably indicates someone who's never met an evangelical in their entire life. I mean, the reality here is, if you listen to Focus on the Family and Jim Dobson, it's a discussion of the struggles of families that no one's exempt from. I mean, everything from child sexual abuse to bedwetting, in the most popular radio program in evangelicalism. Mm. And the reality here is that evangelical Christianity, at least in most of its expressions, is not about the achievement of perfection. It's about the acceptance of forgiveness and healing. I think almost everyone, every evangelical knows and respects someone who has had to deal with this kind of family crisis with dignity and with God's help. And, to say that somehow they're going to be revolt against this, I think, is a fundamental misunderstanding of the nature of faith.
Does Sarah Palin being named the vice presidential candidate onto the ticket with John McCain mean that a McCain administration would have its arm around the religious right in a way similar to George W. Bush, do you think, Michael? Or, you know, historically, he's kept a lot more distance than President Bush has.
No, that's true. He was highly critical of the religious right in the 2000 election, and I think paid for it. But I would have to say that I think that he now is more popular than he has been, although there are remaining suspicions on a variety of issues. But I also think that the religious right, in some ways, is itself changing. That's a broader discussion. I think an increasing emphasis not just on issues of traditional family values, but also issues like the environment, which McCain's good on. Issues like international humanitarian aid, malaria, AIDS, which McCain is quite good on. So I think he has some tools to actually appeal to this younger, emerging, religious conservatives who have a broader agenda.
Let's take a call from Newton, Massachusetts, and Chad. Chad, you're on the air.
Hi. Your panel somewhat answered my question, but do they believe it's wise for John McCain to pick a vice president who will help him win election as opposed to Obama picking a VP that helps him govern?
Byron York, what do you say?
Well, you got to win. There's been a lot of talk about Palin in terms of Dan Quayle, for example, and I kept thinking, but they won. Once, at least. In 1988, they won. So I wouldn't say that Obama made his pick entirely on the basis of governing. I think Obama wants to win the election, and so I would say the Biden pick was a dual-purpose pick.
Michael Gerson, President Bush, seen at least today as a bellicose president, certainly ready to go to the gun. John McCain, famous for a kind of temper, famous for wanting to defend American honor. When you look at President Bush's legacy when it comes to taking the nation to war, do you imagine it would be very different under John McCain? Circumstances always different. John McCain has said over the years, that you must not go into war lightly, and yet, he's proud to be ready to do it. Do you see a different temperament when it comes to war making?
Well, John McCain has a history on this, and he was very hesitant about intervention in Beirut, which I think was a wise choice.
Under Reagan, yep.
Yeah, under Ronald Reagan. And I would also say, however, though, that, having been on the governing side and the journalism side, the range of responsible foreign policy options for the President of the United States is pretty narrow. When you go to negotiations with Iran, and you go to negotiations with North Korea, and you go to relations with China or Pakistan, there's going to be a lot of continuity, by the way, whether it's John McCain or Barack Obama.
But going to war with Iraq, Obama says, no, I wouldn't have done it. McCain says,
I agree. I think that there is a distinction there. But if you're looking at the route that the president has pursued on the major foreign policy crisis right now, I think that you would see a lot of continuity in the way that these things are approached. Maybe a little more emphasis on diplomacy, maybe a little more emphasis on kind of the stick side, but I don't think that there would be as much difference as people generally assumed. John McCain's not going to go to war because he has a bad temper. There's no history of that in America. That's not the way it happens. So I think that there will be a lot of continuity in these questions.
I leave this conversation thinking about Iraq. Obama signaling last week he'd like to talk about John McCain and temperament and war, but that's for another day, maybe for a debate down the road. Michael Gerson in Washington, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Good to be with you.
Byron York with the National Review here with us in St. Paul. Thanks for joining us,
Thank
Byron.
You, Tom.
And Juliet Alperin with the Washington Post. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks so much.
Listeners, join us again live from St. Paul. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.